Days at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC right after the international news.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We've reached the quarterfinal stage at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Egypt, and there have been some surprises, including the elimination of host Egypt and defending champion Cameroon, and the fairy tale run of Nations Cup debutante Madagascar. The Indian Ocean Island team will take on Tunisia Thursday in Cairo. One of the fans who's been watching the action in Egypt is Kalusha Bwalya, the 1988 African Footballer of the Year and former president of the Football Association of Zambia. Ahead of the Nations Cup quarterfinals, my VOA colleague Sunday Shamari asked Kalusha for his assessment of the tournament.
First of all, it's been a good tournament. Few surprises, okay, and big surprises and not so big surprises. First of all, if you look at the host Egypt was not able to get going when they played against South Africa. South African team that had gone through as number three in their group and came out and played like South African play. You know, Bafana is a good team. They're good players. They have good coach. And, they turned it on against the host in front of, more than 70,000 people. And on the day that Egypt, I think that they had come into the match maybe thinking they would just roll over Bafana. And so it wasn't so much as a surprise for me because I know that Bafana can play. And, they were already in the game in the first minute. They went, when the game kicked off, you could see what their intention were. They were pressing. The three boys up front were pressing. And I think that Egypt never came out of that. And I think Benin has been able to, to qualify. They themselves have been rock solid. I think for me that was probably the surprise because I've seen all Benin games in Ishmaelia. Solid team, and I must take my hat off to them, Benin, because it's a long time that I've seen an African team play so concentrated, sticking to the game plan and never being, getting out of their system. Everything was like controlled and that kind of discipline that you see in the European teams, if you want to put it that way. Yeah. And I think it was good to see. I was surprised that Morocco, with Coach Hevrena, they didn't come out of the blocks. Okay. Again, luck was not with them. Of course, they missed a penalty in the last minute, and that can happen to any team. But surely, one of the probably was one of the favorites for the tournament, and you saw them see. You saw them out of the tournament. And then Madagascar has been another surprise, playing very, very good football. Watched on TV when they played against Nigeria, and I thought they were very, very good. And then so playing against a country like DRC that has a lot of history in Africa, one of the some of the best individual players in the tournament, like this, the DRC has Congo. They are a super team, always well represented in Africa with Vita, a great coach. Mazembe, Vita, all the teams, they're always in the later competitions of the Confederations Cup or the Champions League. So, for Madagascar to come and do what they did, it was really remarkable.
A lot of surprises for sure. Yeah. And we are seeing now Ghana is out of the competition. What's your assessment on the Ghana game and then coming up towards the quarterfinals that we're going to see Senegal taking Benin?
Yeah, it was, of course, just to mention that Algeria has played some of the best football in this tournament. I think individually also, they're up to the task. They're looking really, really good, Algeria. And of course, Senegal. you know, they're all in the quarterfinals. But if you look at yesterday's game in Ismailia again with Ghana, it was a 50-50 match. It was 50-50, you know, Tunisia, they're always there. They're always pushing, and at a particular time, you know, Ghana couldn't get going. You know, Ghana, I know in the last 10, 15 years, I think Ghana, we're always used to seeing them in the quarters, in the semis, in the final. We sort of get used to that. World Cup, they were in 2006, they were in 2010, they were 2014. So you're always used to seeing Ghana going as far as they can because of the pedigree that they have, and you know, the Ayo brothers and all the players, Wakasu, and all the players that Pate, and all the players that they have. So you know, really sad because their wait has to, they have to wait. The last time Ghana did win an Africa Cup was in 1982. So having said that, yeah, we're looking forward to the quarterfinals. Let's see what they'll bring. We after the quarterfinals, I think that 10 people will be able to see which team is in there. Maybe they have, you know, hand on the cup, or they are there looking to go to the final. But it's too early to say. You know, from a spectator point of view, you want to see a team that maybe has not won for a long time, or something, you know, do something extraordinary. And I think that maybe we are heading to that. So it's really good to see. It's good for the tournament. The tournament has been superb so far. So we're really pleased to be here.
That's Kalusha Bwalya, the 1988 African Footballer of the Year and the former president of the Football Association of Zambia. And Kalusha spoke with my VOA colleague Sunday Shomari in Cairo, Egypt. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Cairo is also where Nigeria will play South Africa Wednesday evening in an eagerly awaited Nations Cup quarterfinal. The match kicks off at 1900 hours UTC GMT. Fans of both teams are making their voices heard ahead of the match. We'll hear from two South African supporters now, followed by two Nigerian fans.
I hope that we could win, and we can win, because no one thought that we would win Egypt, and they were one of the favorites to win the tournament, and we won them, so I think we can win.
That match, I think it's going to be a great match. Because it's not gonna be our first time to beat Nigeria. We did before. So we can make it, especially these guys now. They have been promised with big cash. That's why, on my side, I'm willing, the coach should not change that squad, previous squad. He must just keep him on like that. Because those guys, they are in high hopes of getting some nice cars, nice houses. So we are there for them.
Nobody is perfect in football. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But what I believe is that Nigeria will win South Africa, because we always win them. We always win them when coming to African Cup of Nations.
Where I would say we have a problem is the defense. The defense has not been living up to its billing, because we have had some lapses in that defensive line, and that's why we have considered a couple of goals. And I still think that the defense needs to be worked upon. Do you understand? The midfield is okay for me. The midfield has thrived very, very well. Then the attack is not 100% lethal, but we have what it takes to beat the South Africans. So definitely, the Super Eagles of Nigeria will beat the South Africans.
That's confident Nigerian football fan Orduin Appel speaking in Abuja, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. As I mentioned on Tuesday's show, Nigeria's Emmanuel Amunike has left his position as head coach of the Taifa Stars of Tanzania. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Amunike said it was a mutually agreed upon decision with the Tanzania Football Federation.
We have a mutually parted way. I think after the AFCON, we came back, and then we had a meeting with the federation. They say they want to continue with another coach. So that's the thing in football. I think we thank them. We thank the Tanzanian people for giving us the opportunity to coach their national team. So in football, it's part of it. You have to learn to forge ahead. So that's the scenario.
What was the experience like working in Tanzania for this 1 year plus?
Well, for me, the experience was great. I think every human being in life, you need challenges. And the Tanzanian job is one of the challenges. Looking at the history of Tanzanian football, looking at what they have done in Africa. So, 1988 is probably I was still 9 to 10 years. I could even hardly remember if AFCON was played in Nigeria then. But as destiny may have it, 2018, I find myself in their football. But I'm grateful, you know, 2 years contract I have with them. The first year we were able to qualify them to the AFCON of 2019. Of course, in the AFCON, except we are not realistic to ourselves, a lot of AFCON has come and gone. Under 39 years, a lot of players have played. A lot of changes has come into football. So our players, this is the first time they are involving in big stage in African football. So you can't do away with that experience. You can't do away with that nervousness. You can't do away with that a lot of mistakes. But it's through those process, you know, we afford you to mature, to grow. But for me, it's an experience, and I'm happy that we came here and we were able to, you know, position the football back to African level. So I'm happy and I'm grateful, and I'm grateful to Tanzanian people, you know, for giving us the opportunity to serve them.
Coach, from Tanzania now, what next for Coach Emmanuel Amuneke as far as football is concerned?
Well, my Coach Amuneke will still be in football. For now, is to rest a little bit and spend time with family. My family is in Spain. So, as the time goes on, we see what the future will unveil. But for now, is to disconnect and stay with family and stay with friends.
Coach, any parting words for the football fans in Tanzania and all lovers of Emmanuel Amuneke there?
I'm grateful to Tanzania for giving us this. You know, I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for the fans. I think it has been a very impressive year for Tanzanian football.
That's Emmanuel Amuneke, the former coach of Tanzania's national team and the 1994 African Footballer of the Year. And Emmanuel spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's turn to the world's premier cycling event, the Tour de France. Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel has an update for us. Sporty greetings, Ryan.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The 2019 Tour de France got underway last Saturday, and the grueling 21-leg race will continue until July 22nd. A little background on how the vaunted cycling race works. 5 major awards are up for grabs. The first and most important award is the general classification winner, the rider with the lowest total time for all 21 stages. The current leader in the general classification gets to wear a yellow jersey while they ride. Right now, the yellow jersey bearer is Julien Alaphilippe, the French home favorite and winner of Stage 3. Last year's general classification champion, Geraint Thomas of Great Britain, is in contention, sitting in 7th place right now. Also available is the Top Young Rider Award, given to the rider 25 years or younger as of January 1st that has the lowest total time. The Top Young Rider gets to don a white jersey to identify them while they ride, and currently wearing it is 24-year-old Belgian Wout van Aert. Then, there are the points classification and mountains classification awards. Riders who make it first to specified areas along the various stages are awarded points towards the points classification, while riders who make it first to the top of steep climbs are awarded points to the mountains classification. Slovakian Peter Sagan currently leads the points classification and as a result wears the green jersey. Sagan is the defending points classification champion and is tied for the Tour de France record, having won the green jersey 6 times. The talented sprint cyclist will look to break the record with his 7th green jersey this year. The unheralded Belgian Tim Wellens leads the mountains classification and in turn gets to wear the polka dot jersey, although defending mountains champion Julien Alaphilippe will likely look to take that award. Finally, there is the team championship award. The team with the lowest combined time for its top 3 riders takes the title here. Currently leading is the Dutch-based team Jumbo-Visma, which contains top riders like Dylan Groenewegen, Primoz Roglic, and Wout van Aert. As you can tell, There's a lot going on at the Tour de France, and every stage brings its own unique challenge. Stage 1, a flat stage, was won by Dutch sprinter Mike Teunissen. Stage 2, a team time trial, was taken by Team Jumbo-Visma. Stage 3, a hilly stage, was won by Alaphilippe. Stage 4, another flat stage, was taken by Italian Elia Viviani. And today, Stage 5 was won by Peter Sagan. The Tour de France will get tougher as we progress, and we'll see some difficult mountainous stages really challenge the riders. It's likely that many of the top riders won't even make it to the finish line. It'll be fascinating to see who rises to the test this year to take the Tour de France awards. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Ryan. That's Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to New York City, where the world champion U.S. Women's National Soccer Team was celebrated Wednesday morning with a ticker tape parade. The sounds from the parade included bagpipes, the song God Bless America, and jubilant drumming. You've been listening to some of the sounds from Wednesday morning's ticker tape parade for the world champion U.S. Women's National Soccer Team in New York City. The American women defeated the Netherlands 2-0 on Sunday in the Women's World Cup final in Lyon, France. It was their second consecutive world championship and fourth overall. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to the USA's Jill Ellis, the first coach to win two Women's World Cups. On the men's side, the only time it's occurred was in 1934 and 1938 by the late great Italian manager Vittorio Pozzo. In more sports news, the American League was the winner in Tuesday night's 90th annual Major League Baseball All-Star Game in Cleveland, Ohio. The AP's Matt Lodi reports from Cleveland.
For the seventh straight time, the American League was victorious in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, taking home a 4-3 decision over the National League at Progressive Field in Cleveland. Indian starting pitcher Shane Bieber took home the MVP award in the game. He struck out the side in the fifth inning. Bieber said it came as a shock to win the MVP.
I didn't really know what to think. Kind of lost all feeling in my body. But it's it's an incredible feeling now that it's kind of sinking in. Just to be able to do it in front of the home crowd in my first All-Star game is definitely not something I expected, especially being added to the game 5 days ago.
Masahiro Tanaka of the Yankees got the win. Clayton Kershaw of the Dodgers took the loss. Aroldis Chapman of the Yankees got the save. Joey Gallo of the Rangers hit a home run in the seventh inning to put the American League up 4-1. Matt Lodi, Cleveland.
Thanks, Matt. In professional golf, first round action begins Thursday at the John Deere Classic in Illinois. The golfers are competing not just for the tournament trophy, as we hear now from Josh Laskowski.
This week, as is the case at all PGA Tour regular season events, players will compete for the season-ending Aon Trophy and $1 million prize in the Aon Risk Reward Challenge. Andy Weitz is Chief Marketing Officer for Aon, a global professional services firm that brought the concept to both the PGA Tour and LPGA.
And what we did is we worked with each of the tours to identify the most strategically challenging holes on each regular season tournament so that we could make that hole into the Aon Risk Reward Challenge hole. And what we're doing is taking the two best scores from each tournament, from each player, and tracking their performance over the course of the season so we can identify the player who makes the most effective calculated decision, who takes the right amount of risk to realize the most reward.
Here at TPC Deer Run, the PGA Tour designated the par 4, 361-yard, 14th hole for this week's John Deere Classic. And that suits 2012 winner Zach Johnson just fine.
You know, hit an iron of some sort down there and hit a wedge, but it could be a blind shot. So, you know, the risk is taking your driver out or three wood out or whatever it is, depending on the situation, and getting after it.
Johnson, whose career wins include the Masters and the Open Championship, admits players will need to consider a number of variables when playing 14.
It depends if there's elements involved, right? The wind. Oftentimes the tee box is moved up, you know. There's, I don't know how many tee boxes are on that tee, but it seems like there's a bunch going down the hill. So if the front of the green or near the front of the green, the front bunker is gettable, it's pretty much worth it. I mean, well, I've always thought you got to be pretty aggressive on that golf ball.
While Johnson is currently ranked 108th in golf's world rankings, the Iowa native is tied for 43rd in the Aon Risk Reward Challenge, which continues to provide fans insight into how players make their decisions. A win for all concerned, according to Johnson.
It's a great incentive. It's a great way to showcase some pretty talented athletes and incentive for companies to join hands with the PGA Tour and utilize our platform.
There's currently a three-way tie in the Aon standings among Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, and Jason Day. But all three are taking the week off in preparation for next week's Open Championship. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Josh Laskowski at the John Deere Classic in Silvis, Illinois.
Thanks, Josh. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's welcome back Ryan Handel now for a Wimbledon tennis update. More sporty greetings, Ryan.
Thanks for having me back, Sonny. Now, the men's semifinals at Wimbledon are starting to shape up. Earlier today, Novak Djokovic, the defending Wimbledon champion, dominated Belgian David Goffin in three sets, the final score being 6-4, 6-0, and 6-2. And Spaniard Roberto Bautista Agut continued his Cinderella run into the semifinals. He took out Argentinian Guido Pella in four sets. Now, tomorrow, on the women's side, we'll have the semifinals, and that will be between Serena Williams and Barbara Strakova, and the other will be between Simona Halep and Elena Svitolina. And one other notable update, the fan-favorite mixed doubles team of Serena Williams and Andy Murray was eliminated earlier today in three sets. That's all I got from Wimbledon.
Well, I think I need to make a Wimbledon correction, Ryan. I think on yesterday's show, I got the nationality wrong of Elena Svitolina. Tell our VOA listeners where she's from.
Yes, Elena Svitolina is from Ukraine, actually, and she'll be facing the Romanian Simona Halep. So we'll have an all-Eastern European matchup in the semifinals.
To our VOA listeners, I apologize. I think I had Svitolina from Latvia, but she is from Ukraine, and she has made it through to the semifinals. Once again, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a photo of Megan Rapinoe and the victorious world champion U.S. women's soccer team. As we heard earlier in the show, they were celebrated on Wednesday morning with a ticker tape parade down Broadway in New York City as Americans love their USA world champion soccer team. And that wraps up the July 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Rob McLean. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sunny Young in Washington, And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States have also educated prominent Africans, like the founding presidents of Nigeria, Ghana, and Malawi. The role of historically black colleges and universities on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
This is Science in a Minute.
As a young child, you may have been ordered to eat your broccoli because it's good for you. Well, this sage advice is actually based in science. Past studies provided evidence that broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables like cabbage, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts may play a role in inhibiting the growth of common forms of human cancer. A new study led by Dr. Pier Paolo Pandolfi at Boston's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center suggests that a gene called WWP1 produces an enzyme that interferes with the work of a powerful cancer-suppressing gene called PTEN. Working with mice, Dr. Pandolfi and his team found evidence that I3C, a compound found in cruciferous vegetables, can shut down the production of this enzyme that keeps PTEN from doing its job in fighting cancer. The study was published in the journal Science. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
This is our moment. We are speaking out to end malaria.
This is DJ Drogba. Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Join me. United, we can beat malaria.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.